All right, I got Al Herrera on the show. He's a leadership coach and identity expert with over 20 years in various leadership roles, including Fortune 500 companies. He's also a trainer and a speaker with the John Maxwell team, where he coaches executives, organizations, and individuals through leadership growth and challenges. Al, welcome to the show, brother.
Thanks, Joel, man. I'm excited, bro. Your energy is freaking off the charts. And I knew instantly that we connected. It was like instant connection, brothers for sure. Similar mindset. So I'm excited to spend some time with you, man.
Yeah, man. Likewise. And the thing about it is we talk about this a lot, about energy, right? And I think, you know, one of our mentors, David Meltzer, talks about this a lot, and that the fastest thing that vibrates is the truth. And I think when you have two people that are aligning in truth and our truths, what we call our truths, things just happen really quickly, that energy and that connection. And that's why we both are where we are. So I'm excited to jump into things with you. One of the things that I find fascinating with you is you're a leadership coach. You've been doing this for over a decade. But the fact of the matter is, man, you have a checkered past. You weren't always a leader. And the journey wasn't always easy for you. In fact, you were a criminal. You were indicted on federal crimes. So talk Absolutely. About that, man, and how you persevered. You came rose out of the ashes as a phoenix, going from federal indictment criminal to now top leadership coach in the world.
Oh, yeah, man. Thanks for bringing that up, bro. And I can talk about it now, right? There's a time when I was ashamed of it, embarrassed, and it was part of a scarred past that I didn't want to discuss. And now it's actually a gift, man. But to your point, I've always been a leader, because my definition is leadership is influence. I just didn't always influence the right way. So in essence, you know, what happened with that is, you know, working in the Federal Bureau of Prisons, I was on this side of the bars, kind of some invincibility in my own head. I thought that leadership and was going first, was being bold, was stepping out. It was about courage. It was about ego. So focused on me, man. And ultimately what I did was I lied consistently. My integrity was in check. It was terrible. I lied for my brothers and sisters that were officers, and it got me in trouble. So I pled guilty to obstruction of justice, changed my life, man. I found God. Ultimately, though, what really occurred was it was more about service after that than anything else. And how do you serve people instead of serving myself? Because I was so focused on self and self-preservation that I just had the wrong aim, man. But I had lots of leadership innate gifts and skills. I just aimed it the wrong way. And so once I joined the John Maxwell team and really, you know, started figuring out that this is about service and serving people the right way and having higher standards and values, it was a game changer for me, man. So I wouldn't change it for the world. But one thing it taught me, bro, to be honest, was there's no excuses, man. Like if you're going to tell me something can't happen, if you're going to tell me that, oh, it's because I have this conviction, that conviction is not coming off my record ever. But yet I'm able to coach people in organizations that wouldn't even allow me to pass their background test. So don't tell me what's not possible anymore, which I know is exactly your mindset, which is why I love you, bro.
Yeah, I want to, you know, and it's so funny because well, I'm curious, what was the self-talk for you? I mean, originally, I'm sure it's changed over the time, but how did you pick yourself up? Because when you get federally indicted or you have that scar on your record, immediately you're like, my life is over. Yeah. My wife is going to divorce me. My parents, my kids, I'm the laughingstock. Like, I'm a criminal and my life is over. I don't know. How could I ever get another job?
Yes.
But you bounced back. So what was the self-talk that got you out of that? And how did you rise up?
Dude, you are hitting some points right early that most people never touch. So I appreciate it, man. For me, it was about identity, man, to be honest. Like the self-talk was, you said it twice. You are a criminal. It's not an identity for me anymore, right? But when I own that as my identity, now there's nothing I can do. I can't get outside of that. It's an excuse. It's an anchor. It's this scarlet letter that I'm basically planting on my forehead and saying, I'm damaged goods. And in essence, I didn't feel worthy. So I was in the lowest of the lows, man, like no confidence, really owned that definition, which was criminal. and unworthy. And so then what ended up happening, bro, is first, I'm worthy because God loves me for because of who I am, not what I do or what I did. And the same thing goes for any situation now. It's like, look, my identity has nothing to do with my conviction. And, you know, the interesting thing was, I went from locking people up, working in a prison, to almost being locked up, to now unlocking people's potential. And that was a narrative and a story that I had to create and get myself outside of that mindset so I could move forward. So I really do recommend that people look at it and write down, and I did this, write down things that you think are negative about you, and then have a turnaround statement for yourself. Like, what is the opposite of that? What do you actually want to be known as to yourself? Because I don't care how much I coach people, and you know this, how much you coach people. We can coach all we want. We can encourage all we want. But every individual is their biggest critic or cheerleader. And they're going to self-talk themselves out of situations or self-talk themselves into situations. And so now I just speak it into existence for people. And I talk to myself like someone I love. That's it, man.
You know what's fascinating? This is one of the reasons why I love you so much, Al, and I think you are such a world changer, is because you are so honest with who you are and where you come from. And that's why I think you have the ability to make massive change in major organizations. As you know, I used to be a police officer with San Francisco, and I'm going to be honest, the leadership there is a wreck. There's absolutely no leadership. They're all a bunch of people that are fawning for attention.
That's right.
And they're not intentional. They want to be attention grabbers and just they'll backstab anybody. And I actually see that in a lot of organizations, but because of your story, there is no ego. Like, you were at the top two and you fell. So like for you, it's so easy to see right through people's BS and say, I know the mistakes you're making. I know exactly where you're at, and that ain't the way. And so that's why I love so much about you, is because you're just raw and real, and you can reach those people that I think really, really need your help, and they're in powerful leadership positions. And they're just so unconscious.
Yeah, it's very, you know what, Joel, the one thing that you told me, man, which I that's how I fell in love with you really quickly, was you told me that your gaps, you know, ultimately in marriage, in parenthood, you were thinking it's them, not me. And when you took kind of extreme ownership, all of a sudden everything changed. And so that's how you're able to take people through that. Same thing for me, man. Like, man, I suck. Like, I'll make mistakes, bro. And that's how I'm able to help people outside of that. I had the doubt. I had guilt, literal guilt, and then personal guilt. I'm like, now I can help people, because no one resonates with just success stories. They really resonate with the gaps, the lows, the valleys, because that's what people can relate to. And so now that's why I'm able to be comfortable sharing that with people, because I'm like, if it helps one person, man, it's worth the story, because I'm no longer ashamed or embarrassed. Like, this is who I am. This is what I did. And I've separated the two. So that's what helps me continue to move forward and help people just like you do.
Yeah. And just, you know, I was just thinking, there's that famous influencer. He would never call himself that, but he is. Wes Watson, who was in prison for like 10 years.
Yep.
And the guy is one of the richest and most powerful manifestors out in the world. And he owns all the crap he did, but he says, listen, I know what got me there. I know what got me out, and that's I can right. help you. And what can you say about me? Results are results. I'm richer than you. I'm fitter than you. My wife looks better than yours. I mean, but he's real about it. Like, let's stop. You can judge him all you want, but he's doing way better than you, I'm sure, in many ways. And one of the things he did, and he talks about, just like you said, is identity.
Yeah.
I would love for you to hit on that, because one of the things that came, and you were talking about beliefs.
Yeah.
And one of the things I was just telling some of the men that I was coaching the other day is, because they talk to me about the past and these thoughts that they have, and how they just can't get over things. And I'm like, that's so interesting. What makes you think your thoughts are actually yours? How do you... And what I tell them is, you know, you were born in a system, church, the capitalistic system of the United States, the school system.
That's right.
All these systems of, and people gave you these ideas, but we all take them and own them like they're our ideas, Al. Like, oh yeah, like this is just who I am. And I'm like, how do you know that? And they're like, what? I'm like, how do you know that? Like, is it really your belief? And my whole point is your thoughts are using you. You're just a vessel for your thoughts.
Dude.
So talk to me about identity. And I hear a lot, especially in the first responder world and men that are transitioning jobs.
Yep.
And they're like, they lose their job from an injury. And all of a sudden they're like, I used to be a police officer and now I'm not that anymore because my identity was that.
So
how do you help people establish this identity? And you know it better than anybody.
Yeah, man. So good, bro. Like a few things you said, I want to touch on. So the thoughts then become beliefs, right? There's a transition. It goes from thought to belief. Then it's a behavior. And then that's your personality. And people get really sensitive. They're like, you're challenging who I am. I'm like, yeah, because that's not, because you have the ability to change. It's just changing some thinking. Like your BS, I'm not buying it. And what I mean by that is not just BS the way you and I think about it, but it's belief system. So your belief system has been ingrained and the neural pathway has now, it is in your head. You keep saying it over and over, and then you will find evidence to back that up. You see, I it's because I'm convicted. It's because I'm unworthy. It's like, no, whatever you look for, you will find. And I just believe from my perspective that when you step outside the frame and you look at it, how do people do it? How do people get outside of that? Ask them. Like Dave Meltzer, being a coach of mine, has helped me dramatically with scarcity versus abundance. I was broke, man. My mom raised me and my brother for a period of time by ourselves. We ate government cheese. She never accepted it, but people brought it to us. And ultimately, I could have been thinking, man, this is all I have. I better hold on to it. And understand, like as John Maxwell shared with us, look, leadership is influence. You're a leader, whether you want to be or not. It's not about leading a company. It's not about, look, you influence somebody. And either you're going to influence them positively, you're going to influence them negatively, or you're neutral. And if you're neutral, that's negative. You might as well not exist. And so as I started thinking about these things and started to change my thought process and working on me and going, man, Al, you have to upgrade. What does that look like? And then ultimately, man, by whether it's popular or unpopular, I could care less what anybody else thinks, man. My Heavenly Father created me. And so when I think about that, He gets to tell me who I am, not the situation, not the person that is, you know, giving me the stamp of convicted felon. Like that doesn't define me. Like I was talking to someone the other day, coaching an individual, he's in construction, owns a business. And I said, when did the store become a store? Like, when does that happen? He goes, well, what do you mean? It's a blueprint. Like they told me to build a store. I go, yeah, but when did people drive by and go, that's a store? And he goes, well, when I was finished. I go, that's the exact same thing that happens when you come out of the womb. When you're finished, God goes, I created you. That's who you are. You don't get to pick and select. So what He says is, I'm worthy. I'm forgiven. I'm righteous. I'm a child of God. Like, how do I negate that? I didn't build me. So that's why. So for me, man, it's those spiritual principles. And but let's just say it's not. Let's say I come across someone that has no belief in any of that. You still have the ability to change this, and I could label you, boom. And then you can take that label on and move forward, period, end of story. And I will find, just like you can, I will find, you know, facts in your life, skills and gift sets that you have that you are negating completely because you have this negative stinking thinking. And it's just a challenge for a lot of people, including myself. I haven't arrived. I don't think I ever will. But I'm not going to stop trying and growing, bro. Every opportunity is growth. You and I talked about it before this. You're still growing in your business. So am I. I'm growing with organizations. I mean, it's just, I just want to get better, man. I'm tired of like watching just this standstill and people say, well, experience, you know, they've got a lot of experience. They're getting better. I go, it doesn't mean they're getting better. You swing a golf club for 20 years and never get better. You just suck 20 years later, exactly the same, unless you upgrade and upskill. Get around people that are better than you. Challenge yourself. Go take a lesson. Do something different. Otherwise, you're just ingraining a terrible swing and you still suck.
So true. One of my business mentors said he had a business coach come in. He's a coach and he helps people build profitable businesses. And he had a business coach say, what am I going to learn from you? You're a punk 30-year-old and I have 30 years of business mastery. And you know what he said to him? He said, well, that's great. He goes, let me ask you something. He goes, do you have 30 years of business experience or do you have 1 year of business experience done 30 years in a row the same way? And the business coach looked at him and said, let's go. I'm ready to sign up with you.
I'm all in. That's great, man. Good. And it's just being that and you and I, the way we connect too, is you have a growth mindset. Like yeah. I knew that at the time, the first time I talked to you, I'm like, Joel's open to growth, period. If you're open, bro, it's over. Like you're unstoppable and unlimited. So I love that about you too, man.
So good. I love that. Be unlimited. That's why I named my father's program Limitless Fathers. Cause I had exactly that idea. Be unlimited. I want to talk to you about your transition now to working with John Maxwell. He's by far one of the best or the top known. He's been in the game for, I mean, what, over 40 years, probably teaching leadership. Yep. You're working with the best of the best. Can you share just some behind the scenes anecdotes just from your time working alongside John and his team and anything that just truly exemplifies his leadership philosophy or that stood out for you?
Yeah. Yeah, man. You know, the big thing with John, and I think you and I do this and also people that lead well is, like, again, leadership is influence and it's about adding value to people and situations. So instead of thinking, man, this is what I thought. I thought, man, let me go first. Let me be the one. Let me be the bold one that opens his mouth in a boardroom when other people are afraid. But ultimately, that wasn't it. Like, it was about how do I add value to these people, to this group? I would be sitting, I work for a big pharmaceutical company, and I'd be sitting in these rooms with, you know, MIT and Harvard and I'm like, UT San Antonio. First of all, I don't belong here, number one. And secondly, what value am I going to add? And so I thought, let me just open my big mouth and share what everybody else is thinking. And ultimately got my hand slapped multiple times. Like, that's not the way you do it, Al. So I had limited emotional intelligence, number one, because I wasn't reading the room or the situation. And then I'm like, how's that adding value? Is there a better way? And ultimately, what I started to figure out, you know, with the help of John Maxwell and his team is you have to figure out what each individual needs as how to add value to them. Not what you think is valuable, but knowing them, building relationship and rapport, understanding scenarios, how do you add value to them? And once you take yourself out of the frame and look at another person, and that's how you connect and add value. And then the other thing too was, you know, you and I both know that failure's critical. It's critical. And so one of the things that never changes for me is sometimes you win, sometimes you learn. It's not failure unless you don't learn. Then count it failure. Your boy that was building for 30 years, failure. Because the joker wasn't learning. He wasn't getting better. He didn't know why his money wasn't increasing. It's like you need a business coach because you're not learning. And if you learn and get better and grow, which was the number one thing for me, like how do I continue to grow? Because I fail every week still to this day. So it's doing a self-check, which really helps me dramatically.
Yeah, that's massive. You said a whole bunch of things there about emotional intelligence and also that idea of influence and how you're enrolling people by how you're leading and how you're, what you're saying, the words you're speaking. I'm curious in that note is what is that? I'm curious. What's the most common misconception about leadership that you encounter and how do you debunk it?
Yeah. I think one of the biggest misconceptions is you're a born leader or you're not. Mm. That's what I hear all the time. Cause I'll say, who's a leader in this room? And not many people want to raise their hands.
Wow.
And then I say, you're all leaders. You know why? Cause you're influencing people. Cause it's more about followership than title. And so the biggest misconception is I'll be a leader when I achieve this title. And it has nothing to do with that. Like, I lead teams that I'm a part of, not that I lead. I don't have to lead in title. It's, I can lead an entire group. It's about followership. Who would follow you? If you said, hey, check this out, there's an opportunity over here, would people actually listen and want to follow you that way? Or are they only following you because you have a title and they have to follow you? So from my perspective, that's the biggest distinction. There's lots of myths out there like, oh, as an entrepreneur, you're a leader. No, actually you're not. It doesn't mean anything. It just means that you took a chance on you and you started a business. So what? It doesn't mean that people will follow you. So adding value to people allows them to want to follow you, not have to. So from my perspective, that's the biggest misconception. And people think that, oh, well, if I show them this, if I just model, maybe, and maybe not. But I can promise you this, when you add value to people, truly add value to them and care about them, like care. You care about them. You help them. They begin to trust. And once they start trusting, now you have followership. And I just think that that would help dramatically with everybody that you and I lead.
I love that. I love that idea that everybody isn't a leader, because you're right. And I always tell guys in their marriage and stuff, like, and you know, we talk about sales. I always think about like sales and like, I'm not a salesman or whatever. I'm like, you're selling people every freaking day. You're selling your wife to love you. You're selling your kids to believe in you. Yes. But the problem is nobody believes you because you ain't leading and you haven't done anything to exemplify leadership.
Love it.
So my only, I agree that everyone's a leader, Al,
yep.
But I think there's also good leaders and bad leaders. And
100%.
What do you think then makes up a good leader? Because I'm telling the guys in my group all the time, The reason why you don't have trust is because you don't have leadership. And the reason why you don't have leadership is because you haven't even mastered your freaking self.
That's right. 100% agree. I think it's self-mastery, right? Like, know yourself first. A lot of people can't serve others because they're so insecure about self. So they're too busy focusing on, man, put the spotlight on me, trying to get validation. Well, learn who you are, know your gaps, be comfortable, you know, be secure in who you are, the good and the bad. Then you can actually start highlighting other people and serving them where they're at, instead of always looking at self. So I think being so self-focused sometimes, not always, but I think it is a mindset, and it starts in insecurity of who you are, because you don't even know what you're good at, and you definitely won't share what you're bad at. Like the best cultures in any organization that I've ever been a part of or helped are when people know this is what I have that's fantastic, here's superpower, and also this is what I really suck at, and I can really use help here from others. When people can be themselves and take the freaking mask off, that is culture. Like, that's a culture that people are comfortable in. But if you got to go in protecting and going, I got to hide, because if they see this about me, they're going to judge. They might take me off position. They might figure me out. Well, guess what? They're figuring you out anyways. You just don't know it. You think you're hiding it, and you're not. Everybody picks it off. I picked it off in 5 minutes when I started talking to you. Like, it didn't take me long, and I'm no genius. I just watched. And so that's the facade. When people can pull that down, be okay with who they are, that's why the identity is so critical. Then they can serve others and highlight other people, and then they'll get followership. Otherwise, it's all about manipulation. It's all about how do I get to what I want instead of what other people want.
You know what's funny about that? I didn't even think about that until you said that. In our first 10-minute conversation, both of us radically told each other everything that was wrong with us and how we made mistakes. And then I was like, now it's your turn. I didn't, nobody was like, this is what makes me so great. You're so lucky to be connected to me. The first 10 minutes was literally, yes, these are all the ways I failed. Just so you know,
it was, you're exactly, I've never had a conversation like that, Joel. It's usually taking people time to warm up, but you went in, I went in. It's like, wait, we both have sucked. So that's true, man. It's genuine. And then people, what you did for me was you allowed, which I'm already there for the most part, but sometimes you open the door for me to share my gaps, right? And when that happens, the relationship changes dramatically. And you're like, you know what? I can resonate with that. But if Al would have came on and said, man, here's where I'm fantastic. Here's why people really follow me. It's never my looks. And it's never a head of hair either, because I'm bald and I can't help anybody with hairstyles. So,
Al, talk to me about, that's a great point about feedback. And it's so crucial. Getting feedback in my marriage has been, yes, monumental. I hate getting feedback because it shines the light on where I'm not good enough. And if you know me, I have a lot of I'm not good enough and I'm not worthy enough paradigms from my childhood and where I am now.
Yep.
And it's so valuable. How do you honestly get feedback in just your own life? Your, yeah, either your marriage, your fatherhood, yeah, your business, your health. Like, who do you have that keeps you accountable and is shining, yeah, the light on you and saying, hey, you got to grow up here?
Yeah, man. You know what's interesting about that? And it's a great question, Joe. And I don't think enough people look at this. And I would say I'm really good at getting feedback professionally. So, you know, I have a CrossFit coach. I have a, you know, a leadership coach. I have a business coach. I have spiritual mentors and all this. And then when it comes to, you know, and they help me with my family too.
Of course.
But one thing too that I'm still, you just mentioned something that I'm going to do a better job of is asking my family more. How am I doing as a father? And a way to do that is, what am I doing well? What am I not so doing so well? And what do you think I could do different to be better? Because I tell people professionally to do that. And I do it myself professionally, but I don't always do it well internally with my family. Now, my wife and I, we pick each other off left and right. And sometimes it hurts, bro. Like,
they're the best ones, by the way. My wife is my greatest life coach. She used to always tell me, I don't know why you just paid that guy $5,000. I could have told you that. Matter of fact, I told you that 2 years ago.
That's right. That's right. That's right. Well, I think the reason why is because, similar to her, she didn't marry me to be her coach. She married me to love her and support her. And so when I share things with her, it's like, well, I'm not trying to hear that from you. I'll hear it from someone else. And the same thing goes for her with me, man. So I've gotten so much better recently over the last, I'd say maybe year and a half, of really heeding my wife's advice when she shares something. And it's not just about my clothes, my looks. It's about the way I say something. It's about the way I come across. It's about, you know, my attitude towards something. I've been much better at receiving that, but I still got a long way to go with her because I want her to think the best of me, man. And ultimately when she does, and it stings a little bit because she's the only one really, I think, that penetrates me the way she does. So I'm working on that. And you just brought up another great point, man, that I'm going to get better at after this call.
I'm gonna send you some stuff, just some things that I think you'll really like. And you're already a leader in so many ways. And so it was easy even for me to adopt these things. And like you said, in my health and in my business, I had coaches always, and I had visions and values for every other part of my business, but not my family.
Yeah.
And applying some of the same leadership principles that we do,
yeah,
in all those other areas to your family will be, that's monumental. Right. I'll send you a couple of things and it won't be hard for you. You'll be rocking and rolling.
We've come up with some family vision. We have values. It's interesting. We just asked each other that probably about 2 months ago, maybe. And it was funny how aligned we were as a family. But me getting better and growing as a husband and a father, man, I just got to be more intentional about it. So thank you, man.
Yep. Yeah, just like anything else.
Yep.
You
saw how my countenance changed when I started talking about that. I'm like, yeah. And then, oh, by the way.
No, and I was just curious because, I mean, you mentioned the best organizations have these checks and balances, and they get regular feedback. So I was just curious, is there something that you do in your personal life? Obviously, yeah. You do. You have coaches for everything. Yeah. You just mentioned. You have people that hold you accountable. I'm just always wondering, in the leadership and organization space, what I notice, and maybe you notice the same, is they go to these leadership retreats, or they have someone like you come and speak, and it's a good feeling for about a week, and then they go back. So I guess I was just wondering, what have you seen in the best organizations, yeah. or have you spoken at it, like, let's yep. say Apple or yep. SFPD or somewhere, yep. and you're like, yep. dude, there's a reason why I step yeah. in the room here. This culture is so dialed in, and it's because of this.
Yeah. Like, yeah. I will say that, you know, it starts with the leader asking for feedback, and it could be that simple. What am I doing well? What am I not doing well? And what can I do different? When they do 360 feedbacks, like it starts from here. Like, everything rises and falls with leadership of people. And if the leader doesn't go first, everybody else kind of caves in and goes, well, they're not doing it, so I'm not willing to ask for feedback either. But when you have that shift back and forth, and you're actually proactive about asking for feedback instead of waiting for an annual review or biannual check-ins, which is crap. Like, I would much rather you give it to me on the spot and say, and I'll definitely ask people, like I ask people in my organization, hey, tell me, was that, like, I felt like that might've been over the top the way I responded. What do you think? Well, Al, you could have, da-da-da. I said, well, how can I do better, right? So the same situation. To me, that's the way, like, if you start that as an individual leader, you will start to spread that culture into what it is that you want it to be. But most times it starts at the top, and if not, then you got to lead yourself and ask for feedback proactively. Most people don't want it. Back to identity, because they're already, if you say something negative, it hurts me, and you're going to think less of me. It's like, actually, it should help you. So,
mm-hmm. Yeah, huge. Is there a piece of leadership advice? And actually, let me rephrase that. What's the most unconventional piece of leadership advice that you probably ever given? And I'm wondering, how did it turn out?
Oh, I love when you make me think, man. I got one. So again, back to ownership, right? Like, when you talk about ownership, you and I own lots of things in our lives, and it's blind spots, right? For us and for other people, you need someone to come alongside you. There was an individual I was working with that would talk about how much further he should be in life if not for his ex-wife, if not for a broken business because of a partner, toxic partner. And it's like, look, bro, like, first of all, I said, you need to let that go. And because otherwise it's stopping you from being productive and going in a direction, because you're so focused on what happened to you. And actually, it didn't happen to you. It happened for you for a reason. And from my perspective in leadership, it doesn't happen for me even. It actually happens for others, because now I'm able to share that with people. So the most unconventional advice I've ever given was, I said, write a list down of everyone you need to forgive. And he thought he was golden on that. He goes, that's probably my ex-wife and a couple people. He wrote down 28 people. 28. And I'm like, wow. Like, talk about an anchor. Like, that's heavy, man. The fact that you need to forgive 28 people for how you felt, you know, they crossed you or they treated you or they did you. That's a lot of weight. And ultimately, it is weighing you down like nobody's business. So the cool thing with that is, the next time I chatted with the man, he said, you have no idea how much that helped me. It provided me so much freedom. It unleashed some emotions that I thought I let go, and I hadn't. So I didn't, you know, I had no idea the impact that would have. But once he wrote that down, man, and actually forgave them. Now, I'm not saying that once you forgive, you don't have to go back and forgive again an hour later with the same person. It's not a one and done, right? But what it did was, it opened him up to the possibility that he was still harboring all these things and really making an excuse.
Dude, that's a massive one. I love that you did that. I've done that a couple times with clients, and I remember reading something too, I think about forgiveness. It's such a powerful emotion, I guess, if you will, because, and I think it even like stimulates alpha brainwave states, which is like the meditative wow. states when you start to relax and meditate, and then you go from alpha to theta. So how could you ever create, most of us are living in the stress states. We're in beta, right? And so if we can go from alpha, that meditative state, to then theta, that's when you start to manifest things. So what a great piece of advice that just completely changed this guy's life. And here he is again, looking at external things, blaming his business success or lack of relationship success for all these other things. And it was really all him. He needed to do the inner work. Yeah, he couldn't see it. You shine the light on that blind spot and boom, here we go. Oh, I got one more thing for you. You're going to love this. Wayne Dyer, one of my favorite leadership coaches of all time. RIP, rest in peace, Wayne Dyer. He said, forgiveness is man's highest achievement because it shows man's enlightenment in action. It shows man is in touch with the energy of love.
Wow. Man, that's deep, bro. I like it. I really like it. I've never heard that. I love Wayne Dyer. I think he's fantastic, but I've actually never heard that. That's great. That's great advice, bro.
Yeah, and also there's a higher, and I know you'll appreciate this, there's a higher level to this thinking of like, we can just look at it in a very like literal sense of like, yes, forgiveness is powerful. It's a powerful thing. Everyone should forgive and move on and all that stuff. Wayne Dyer also says though that why it's so important, because he says at the end of the day, on a higher level of thinking, there's nothing to judge or to forgive. Because in reality there is no judgment. On a higher level, there is none of that.
That's great.
So that's why it's actually easy just to let it go.
Right. That's removing resistance dramatically.
Yeah.
You know, the one thing for me from a spiritual perspective, man, I look at how bad I've sucked. And then I'm like, wow, if I can be forgiven by God, then I can definitely pass it on. And the same thing with love. If I can be loved to the degree unconditionally, I can love people and serve them. Like, it's hard to give what you don't know how to receive. So one of the things that Dave Meltzer's taught me too is receivership. Like you need to learn how to receive and receive that, whatever it is. If you're not receiving, it's hard for you to give. Instead of keeping them open and going, let me receive and then freely I can give. So yeah, man, it sounds like similar concepts for sure.
That was powerful. I heard Dave speak recently at an event and he mentioned that, and he was talking about first responders, and you and I both have that background. And that I started crying because I have a big problem with receiving, Al. Yeah. And even when we got on the podcast, you said, hey, what can I do for you? And I immediately said nothing. Like I don't need anything. And it's such a good reflection. And he said that, I think he said, giving and receiving is the same vibration. Wow. And I know that's a big block for me, is accepting things from people and feeling like maybe like I'm worthy enough to receive. I know I can give a ton. I love to give. It lights me up. But I have a really hard time of receiving. And I thought, man, what a mindset shift. Maybe that's where I'm blocking the universe and not allowing things to come because I have such a difficult time.
So that's so good. You know, the one thing, why do you like to give so much? Why is that?
I think one, it just makes me feel special. And I think at a root cause, I have a big human need of being significant and validated.
Yeah.
And so when I see that people light up because I was able to introduce them to somebody or give to them in a positive way, they feel happy. And then that makes me feel like significant and I matter.
Yes. So same. So now the way that's flipped for both of us is, let's make other people feel the same way by receiving. Right? Like the feeling that we get from serving, from giving, from helping, you're robbing people of that when you don't allow them to do the same for you. And once I started to figure that out, man, I'm like, and I'm not there yet. You and I are, we're wired very similarly, man. It's like, well, I don't want to, you know, it's they've got too much going on. And it's like, no, they actually, man, I'm robbing them of a blessing. So I'm going to receive from them. So once I flipped that, man, and started thinking about it like that, two things. One, my ego was part of the gap for that, right? It was blocking because it's like, nah, I need to do it myself and da, 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 and let me figure this out. But ultimately, that ego started to lessen a little bit. I'm not saying it's gone. Trust me. The identity, I'm still working on myself. But it did allow for people to help. I talk about that when you're working with difficult people in general. I'm like, the best way to start building a relationship is just like your neighbor. Go borrow some sugar. Go borrow a shovel. Like ask them for help and watch what happens. All of a sudden, they're open to actually asking you for some type of help. And you're breaking this barrier down. And I don't know, I got that out of nowhere probably 5 or 6 years ago when I shared it. I'm like, you know what? That's the way I break down these tough relationships where no one can penetrate, is being open to receiving and asking them for help first, you know?
That's so good, Al. I love that. That is such a great reframe for me. I appreciate you sharing that flip. And also, I think, and then I remember that story that you're talking about, asking for advice. I think that's known as Ben Franklin. I think they call it the Ben Franklin effect. I think that's something that he used to do. I'll have to go back and look, but yeah,
it's great, man.
I never do that enough. And that is such a great reminder. I'm going to start doing more of that because that is good. I found the quote, by the way. We'll finish up here. It says, there's nothing to forgive because there's, in reality, there's nothing to judge or blame.
Oh, that's great, man. I love
that's
that.
At the higher level of forgiveness. Ooh, so I think you'll fantastic. Like that one.
That's fantastic. I love it.
I want to kind of, we'll wrap some things up here. I wanted to ask you though, just what are some exciting projects that you're working on, that you're excited about coming up in the future?
Yeah, man. Like I got a big mastermind coming up with a local. I collaborated with an individual by the name of Tony Jerry here in Dallas. And we're doing a big mastermind, where really we're focusing on helping people with clarity, focus, and execution in all areas of life. So, it's a day long thing, and we're limiting to 20 people, and then we're going to build it out where it's 90-day touch point virtually in 6 months. But I've done a pretty good job of helping people on, you know, a frequent basis to a cadence, but I think a day long thing, I'll get some depth and be able to help people radically transform, which is what I'm after. And that's what I asked for. And that's what we're going to experience. The other thing is I've got a thing called MLG, Maximize Leadership Group, on Sunday nights, from 7 until about 7:30, 7:45, depending on how many people get on, where I just share a lesson that I'm learning. And, you know, it's less than $50. So it's kind of a less than $50 a month. So it's really affordable, where people can just start to enter into personal development and invest in themselves. Like, what I find is putting some skin in the game then allows people to show up, number one, and go, look, I'm worth putting money into myself. So it's kind of an entry into personal development. And then I do some individual stuff as well, where I'll work with individuals, you know, biweekly in the evenings, mornings, and connect with them every other week to help them become better leaders, man. So that's kind of the three things now. And the speaking thing I like, but to your point, it's a one and done, which I'd rather harvest and see the fruit and watch, you know, people transform. So that's cool to do on occasion, but I really, really love getting involved in people's lives, man.
I think doing those local masterminds is going to be really powerful. And I would say probably lean into that.
Yeah.
And I bet people are going to, I just see your business even scaling even faster and more expansion.
Oh yeah.
Because I think you being in the room with people and being able to impact them in that one day and then follow up with them over the next 90 days, that's going to be really, really powerful. Yeah. And that's something that I'm looking forward to in my own men's group locally as well. Cause I just think, imagine like how much we can do to change. You make one person a leader in your community. That guy's a better dad, a better father, a better businessman. And he goes out and impacts his just local neighborhood.
Yep.
Then the local neighborhood rises up and then they start impacting. I mean, we just have a revolution now, and now we start to expand. So I think a lot of us, big time entrepreneurs, speakers, coaches, we try to go and hit the masses, but imagine just the impact you can do such in one small town. You're in Dallas, which is not small, but you know what I mean? Yeah. It just goes, it expands exponentially. So
going deep. And you know, I also don't want people to underestimate, man. We repeat the mistakes of our family, and our family didn't make mistakes intentionally, and they definitely didn't screw us up at all, but there's other ways to learn. So I want to really highlight what you do, Joel, because I don't think people even realize that they can be a better dad. They're like, this is the way we do it. This is the way my family's done it. This is the way I've seen it. And ultimately, you could say one thing to them that would change their family dynamic dramatically. And then their lineage, their kids, their grandkids now are changed forever. So I really want to highlight that for you, because it's underestimated, bro. And it's such an ego, you know, driven thing that people don't feel like they can get better as a father, as a husband. And you doing both of that work is powerful, bro. So I want to commend you, and I really do. I think it's important work. You've helped me in the time when you were supposed to be highlighting me today. So thank you for that, man.
Yeah, iron sharpens iron. The funny thing too, and you know, I mean, I've talked about it, but I had to fall. I had to have a major fall to learn that, to wake me up, to shake me up. And I really have come to that same conclusion. Just like anything else, fatherhood is a skill, marriage is a skill, and it's one of the few areas in life where we just wing. And like you mentioned, I got coaches and everything. I never had a dad coach up until like 2 years ago. I never had a parenting coach up until like 2 years ago. Right. I had one actually even prior, but the point being is, yeah, why don't we? And you'll appreciate this as a leadership coach. If you can't lead your family, what makes you think you can go out and lead an organization?
100%. Good luck, because when people pull the curtain back and look at your life, they're like, wait a minute, you don't even lead your own family well. Why am I going to listen to you for anything else?
Yeah, and we mentioned it. Our wives and our kids, they are a reflection of us. And actually, they're a reflection of what we are not.
That's right.
And they will make you better leaders if you lean into it. But it's the hardest criticism to ever take. And so if you really lean into what those family members are saying, you will be an amazing leader. Most of us don't.
That's great, man. I love it. Thanks, Joel, for that.
Really, dude, I want to, we'll wrap things up here. I want to know where people can find you and connect with you, but we have some time. I want to ask you just some final round questions if you're good with it.
You got it, bro.
Al Herrera, leadership coach. I want to know, what is a choice or maybe some choices that you made that you think made you who you are today?
Number one, asking for help. I think realizing that just going through life instead of growing through life was going to be a detriment. So when I wasn't getting fed development from an organization after being laid off, I did jump into the John Maxwell team and learned that, man, there's people that can help. And then it just took me on a different journey that I think, you know, my trajectory of growth and learning was like this, instead of just this slow kind of, you know, if you think about a crock pot, you know, over time, and then actually I might be in the crock pot too long and burn. So in actuality, just being in the room with people that could help me grow, that was the game changer for me, man. Cause I had some natural ability, but I was in such lack of awareness. And then got around people that were all focused on developing themselves and developing others. And it's just changed the game for me, man. That's number one.
Yeah.
The other thing was, you know, accepting God into my life, man. It, you know, realizing that, you know, he was always in my life. He was always protecting me, always taking care of me. But I just took it as I'm the one that's doing it myself. And once I humbled myself to understand that, it changed my life for sure. And now I'm, you know, I'm blessed for it. And even during the really crappy times, he's still there, and it's about the way I go through things now and help people go through challenges, because I've been through so much that I couldn't do it without him, man.
I love that, dude. Those are powerful. I'm a big reader. Is there any like a top 1 to 3 books that for you just change your life and you're like, man, people should go out and read these?
Yes. Bible, number one. Every leadership principle comes from the Bible. Number two, man, there's two, maybe I'm going to go three, man, and then I'm going to shut my mouth. Mindset, huge. When you go from fixed to growth, we all have fixed mindset in some area. I don't care what anybody says. We have fixed mindset. You don't have growth mindset in everything. But understand that it's not about the environment. It's about you and what can you do to get better in an area. That was huge for me. Emotional intelligence 2.0, actually taking the assessment and going, where am I with my emotional intelligence, with my self-awareness, self-control, number one. I mean, it's first, it starts with self, and then environmental awareness, and then relationship management. Those, when you get those four and you upskill, and that is an area that I underestimated because I thought it was all about IQ. And in actuality, EQ will take you so much further than just being book smart. It's like, how do you read situations? So those two books, and then the 21 Irrefutable Laws of Leadership, to me, man, is, I mean, if you look at the assessment in the back of that, really take a hard look at you and find out where your gaps are. Those chapters really help you navigate your leadership as a person. And I'd say there's four that if you just dig into those for the rest of your life, you'll be solid.
I love that. Those are good ones. Those are so good. I love that. Thank you. What are some rituals that you have? Are there any practice rituals? I know a lot of high performers are doing cold plunges and gratitude journaling. What are you doing? Yep.
Yeah. So I suck at journaling, man. I gotta do that. That's an area where I haven't really, I write lots of notes. I do lots of slides. Like when I come up when I'm hit with ideas, I'll put on slides, but I gotta get better at journaling, man. You just gave, that's two things I'm going to get better at. For me, ritual, getting up early in the morning, working out, man, like kicking people's ass before the day starts. Like I've beat most people by 6:30 already. Mm-hmm. So it gives me a confidence. I get the dopamine rush, the serotonin hitting. And it's like, you know, I've already conquered something. I'm doing something really hard in the morning. And I just think that we don't do enough hard things. We're very comfortable. And our mind fights for comfort, you know, and protection and security and safety. And I don't want to do that. So it's choices instead of, you know, it's will versus feel. Like it doesn't matter how I feel. It's about my will to go do these things. So that helps me dramatically. I meet with a coach every 2 weeks on business. But from a ritual perspective, those are some things. I got to get better at my nutrition. I've figured out that, man, finally, I can't outwork my diet. So that's one area that I'm going to focus on, man, a little bit better. But yeah, those are the rituals. And then I pray daily, man. I pray. That's something that I can't go a day without, especially when I hit hard times. But even during the good times, lots of gratitude, lots of reminders of, you know, Al, you're not locked up. You're not being chased by a shank right now. That's pretty fantastic. So you know, every day is a good day, man, even when things suck. Like it's just remembering all the things that could have been, all the things I was spared from, and just going, man, I am so grateful that I you know, I have the life I have. Even when things are crappy, man, it's still a good day and God's always good.
Yeah, dude, love that. So good. Man, last but not least, Al Herrera, tell everybody where they can find you, connect with you, learn more about you either on social media or your website, or if they want to book you for speaking and have you come into their organization and tear it up from the ground up and bring it back.
Yeah, man. So, you know, number one, I think it depends on the age, right? One Al Herrera is the tag on Instagram, number one. You know, I put content out there quite a bit just to add value to people. And then, you know, when I look at, when you look at my website as well, ALH Leadership, it really does, you can see some of the things I do, book for speaking. My number is 267-438-9358. I give it out because I'm accessible, man. Like shoot me a text. If you want some help, I'll help you. And then, or I'll point you in the direction of someone that can. So if anybody calls me or texts me after this and says, man, I really want to be a great father like you, Al, I go, nope, call Joel. Because he knows how to help you get there. I have gotten to a place where I've become a better leader, but man, I have so many resources too. So those are the areas, man, that they can connect with me. And ultimately, you know, I think, or they can connect with you and you can connect with me, man. However it works, bro.
Yeah. Amazing. Al, thanks for being on the show, brother. Appreciate you.
Love you, man. Appreciate you so much, Joel. Love what you're doing.
Love you too. Yeah, brother.